With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Cheese and pickle.
All of television history is contained in the Box of Delights. Hello, I'm Julia Rayside. Each episode, my guest chooses a favourite TV memory to talk about. Joining me today is the comedian and writer, Mitch Benn. Mitch, welcome.
Hello.
And what have you brought today to talk about?
All right. 1986, I think about spring of 1986 anyway. Mm-hmm. The very first comic relief show, before comic relief became an institution, it was a series of comedy galas that I think was at the Albert Hall.
It was definitely in a big theatre of some sort, wasn't it?
This was kind of in reaction to Live Aid. It was kind of, let's do a comedy Live Aid.
Yeah.
So let's do a single one-off live spectacular. Except I think they did two or three. And it's Rick Mayall's opening routine. Obviously, because the comic relief single that year was Cliff and the Young Ones doing Living
Yes,
Doll.
They were literally just at number one.
And ultimately, they all come on and do it, but Rick goes out on his own first and just does something.
It's a smart move to send him on first.
It's just the most bizarre thing. When Rick Mayall died, I was 44, and it suddenly occurred to me, in retrospect, that when I was a teenager in the 80s, he and Aid were my rock stars.
Oh, completely.
They were my rock stars.
If comedy ever became anything like rock and roll, which it sort of didn't, but that you're right, they were anarchy,
I obsessed about those guys, the way that you're supposed to obsess about rock music in your teens, which is weird considering I've ended up in bands and everything. But basically, in the 80s, I wasn't listening to a lot of contemporary music. I had a weird obsession with 1960s psychedelia, but that's a whole other podcast. but I wasn't listening to a lot of contemporary, because basically, if you weren't into the Smiths, and I wasn't into the Smiths.
You were ahead of the curve there, because now no one's into the Smiths.
Well, people are pretending that they weren't. You know, it's a perfectly good band, but the problem was I thought Morrissey was a wanker.
I thought he was
insufferable wanker. I really did. And, the internet right now is ablaze with people saying, well, Morrissey's turned out to be a bit of a letdown. I said, well, not if you thought he was a twat in 1983.
You can feel smug about that. What was it about Rick Mayall?
Rick Mayall was... Aid Emerson is perhaps a more naturally humorous presence, but Rick Mayall's was just a force of bloody nature. And particularly what he does here, because it's just Rick totally unhinged. He sings this song, which is this extremely loose cover version of Do You Love Me and or Land of a Thousand Dances.
Yeah.
Well, do you love me?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think I'm great?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you really like me?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, would you like to see my pants?
Yes.
During which he just basically runs around in circles and threatens to expose himself.
Yeah.
That's literally all
just
he does.
Just parts of his body. Yeah, and he's just, got, like, the red beret, character.
He's just a lick from the Young Ones.
Yeah.
Because ultimately the rest of the Young Ones are going to come out with him. Yeah. So he's there very much in character as a lick. The thing about Rick Mayall was there was a sort of weird purity to his minimalism, because like when we first encountered him, of course, was Kevin Turvey in Kick Up the 80s. I've since discovered the backstory behind that, and it kind of makes what he then does for the rest of the 80s make a lot more sense.
Oh, really?
It's because they initially wanted him to be part of the sketch troupe, and he was like, no, I'm not a sketch performer.
Brilliant.
I can't be asked. I don't want it. But they said,
well, I'm a solo artist.
Yeah, but we really want you in the show. And he said, so how about we just give you like a 4-minute bit? And at the time, his writing partner was Jeff Posner, and they sat down and thought, 4 minutes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's 4 minutes, we've got 4 minutes on a BBC Two show, we can't waste it. What are we going to do? And then they thought, bollocks, waste it.
Brilliant.
Do fuck all. Do literally fuck
And it is
all.
One of the most legendary fuck all performances.
Sit there and drone on about fuck all for 4 minutes. And that was what they're going to... And Kevin Turvey, it's almost anti-comedy. It's funny because of how boring it is.
Yeah.
There was something so irresistible about just the sheer mischief of everything Rick Mayall did.
Yeah.
It's like somebody got the world's naughtiest 7-year-old, filled him full of sugar, and just
told him loads of rude words.
Told him all the rude words in the world and just turned him loose. And I watched this at the age of 16, already just a colossal Rick and Aid Young Ones fan. You know, I'm the guy who remembers Filthy Rich and Catflap. I love that show.
Oh, I do remember it, actually.
And watching this, and I nearly shat. I just thought, and I still, to this day, think it's one of the funniest things.
At one point, he does say, "I've just shit my pants," joking, and then he realizes really has the character
exactly.
has to
do that. Yeah. Okay, you know.
And that pelvic thrust he kept doing.
Yeah, you can't say lick without doing it. God, it was funny. I was heartbroken when Rick Mailer.
Yeah, I've said, I'm not over it. Did you not?
No, never met. I've met Aid a couple of times, and Aid's lovely.
This is the way.
And I met Nigel Planer a couple of times as well, and he's great too. When The Young Ones season one came out, I was 12, and if I'm honest, a lot of it kind of went a bit over my head.
Yeah.
And then season one came out, I was 14 and a half. Summer days, and again.
I mean, that's the perfect age.
Oh my God. Watching Bambi, season two, episode one, the University Challenge one.
Oh God.
I laughed so hard, I thought I was going to start bleeding. You know what I mean? I'm fairly sure I've torn something. Oh my God. When Vivian gets his head torn. You know, again, there's a purity to that kind of extremism. Yeah. It's like, no. You know, he's going to stick his head out the window and get his head torn off and piss blood everywhere. And then he's going to find his head, and his head's going to tell him to fuck off, and he's going to boot his head down the line.
I think the same thing with Bottom as well, that they realised their strength was in, no, actually make it look like we're really bludgeoning each other with frying pans.
Yeah, and the evil sprats on the Halloween episode. You know, you can almost see them in the in the meeting with the practical effects group. No, jets of flame out the arse. don't do it in post.
And it doesn't
jets
work.
Jets of flame out the arse.
Exactly.
And I love those guys. They were absolutely my era.
But they did their entrance into this performance, in particular the comic relief one, is so brilliant done. Like you said, you send out your best guy. They're all brilliant, but you send out the most ballsy, unapologetic.
The guy can just basically, you know, tell the audience to piss off for 5 minutes and just is the funniest thing you've ever
seen.
And
everyone's just kind of adoring him. The cruder he gets, the more they love him.
Yeah.
And then he talks about he's a man with a 2 foot cock, and then he's he says something like, they asked me to come on Terry Wogan. I mean, I said I'd do the show. Which is like one of my favourite gags of all time.
Oh God, he was funny.
And he walks into the microphone, the physical stuff is as good as the verbal stuff.
But
then they bring on The Young Ones.
Visually, he was extraordinary. Rick Mail was one of those guys. He and Christian Bale are the two guys who can be as handsome or as ugly as they want to be at any given minute.
Oh, I know what you mean, because Rick Mail was unbelievably
Rick
beautiful.
Rick Mail was a jaw-droppingly good-looking man.
He's so beautiful.
Except when he didn't want to be.
Yeah.
And then he was just revolting.
He could just see the muscles in his face could do something.
And it wasn't a makeup thing. It wasn't a hair thing. It's just like, right, I'm going to be ugly now. And you're like, oh God. You know, I mean, he's repellent in Bottom.
Oh, completely.
He's just utterly
repellent.
All of
his characters always have their pants pulled up higher than their trousers. Like, it just seems to be a theme.
Yeah. He's literally,
for like 30 years he did that.
He's just appalling. He's like sweaty and disgusting. And you know.
And Bottom especially, because he was older and chubbier and kind of had long hair. Yeah. And he was, but strangely still, very alluring.
And like hair too long for how bald he's going.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just
everything about, but, you know, he could just snap at it because, you know, Bastard, he's just jaw-droppingly good looking.
Well, that's
my only
Rick Mail story, which I think I might even have told this podcast, so I'll tell it quickly.
Please.
I had a very, very miserable time working in the basement at ITN years ago, being a sort of a news monkey, just like churning out stories from the newswires. And there was a glass wall next to sort of my desk with a security door. And suddenly someone started rattling it. This was about sort of like 6 PM.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I turned around and pressed up against the glass was Alan Bastard's face going, fucking let me in, fucking let me in. Just furious with a couple of PR people floating behind him. I sort of like pressed the button to let him in kind of with my hand shaking. And he just charged around the office, obviously doing PR for the West End show or something.
Yeah.
And it was the happiest I've ever been. Just to go from being so miserable in that basement to suddenly my life being lit up by my comedy hero. It was great. It was amazing.
It was just an absolute force.
And no one else could have done that and carried it
Rick Mail could tell you to fuck off and it would be the happiest moment of your
life. Honestly, it's like being getting benediction or something.
It's like being blessed by the Pope being told to fuck off.
Seriously.
Nobody could tell you to fuck off like Rick Mail.
No. I still haven't accepted that he's gone. Him and Victoria Wood. I don't accept it.
That tore my heart right out of my body when Victoria Wood. My kids are watching him again. It's funny, so much of this stuff, all the Victoria Wood on TVs are on Netflix.
Yes.
And my kids are absolutely obsessed with them.
Yeah, they're completely brilliant because they don't date really.
They're entirely, you know, a law unto themselves.
Yeah. Her and Rick Mail, actually, when I've asked people, like, what if you did my podcast, what would you do? And their names come up almost every time.
The two people you'd bring back from the dead.
Well, I mean, actually, yes, if we can do that. that. I mean, this podcast obviously can do anything. So if you'd like to now, you have to choose between them, though. Is it Rick or is it Victoria? No, that's an awful thing to say. I would never make it.
No.
That's awful.
No.
Jeez.
No. Yeah, absolutely.
Was this like a I'm going to work in comedy moment, or did that come before or later?
I don't know. I mean, again, it wasn't really a conscious decision working comedy for me. And I think that seemed to be quite common among my generation.
How did you sort of slide into it then? What happened?
I sidetracked into it. I mean, the first time I ever did comedy, this is a very long, boring story. It's in the middle of my degree. I did Spanish and French at Edinburgh University.
Oh,
and
nice.
That was what I was supposed to be doing, but I actually spent most of my time in the Bedlam Theatre, and in particular with the improv troupe, who are still going.
Oh, really?
And I was up at the Fringe like the year before last, and they flyed me.
Amazing.
And I was standing there holding this flyer going,
hi, guys.
I was in this before you were born.
Oh, wow.
You know, literally.
You were that guy. All right, old father time, move along.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the guy who brought improv to Edinburgh Uni was a Canadian guy, because it's kind of a Canadian thing.
Yes, yes. The whole Proops thing and the,
yeah, a guy called Toff Marshall. It was invented by a guy called Keith Johnson in Calgary, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, the Loose Moose Theatre Company. Toff Marshall, hello Toff if you're listening, came to Edinburgh University to do his postgrad in classics and kind of instituted improv at the Bedlam Theatre, which is part of the Edinburgh University Theatre, which is still going.
Before you go,
yes.
Would you mind taking the Box of Delights and putting a question?
I have the Box of Delights. Who do you want to read you a Jack and Ori story?
Okay, bearing in mind Rick Mail has actually done one.
Yeah, he used to do them and he was brilliant.
And obviously, aside from, you can have him as like a desert island Jack and Ori story, but who else?
Well, somebody else would have been good who's also gone. Did Alan Rickman ever do one?
Oh, God, he should have done
he
if he didn't.
Been the best,
that voice.
Let's think, who's just got the most amazing. Yeah, all right, here's what I want to do a Jack and Ori story. Liev Schreiber.
Really?
Ray Donovan, yeah.
Do
because
you?
He's just got the best voice. He's got this real out-of-the-floorboards growl.
Would you be too excited to go to sleep if he was reading
either that or Liam Neeson. Yeah,
oh,
like
okay.
Liam Neeson or Liev Schreiber to do a Jack and Ori story.
I think Liam Neeson would lull you gently
I
off to the
Liam
land
Neeson
of Nod.
Liam would probably do it if they asked him.
I think lots of people would, because it's a real cachet thing for your children, isn't it?
You sit in comfortably. That'll begin. That'll begin.
I will find you and I will kill you. Sorry, children.
Once upon a time.
Thank you so much for bringing Rick Mailin and Mitch. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find links to the YouTube clips from today's episode on our Twitter feed @BoxDelightsPod. Come and say hello. Bye.